Hello, everybody. It is so good to be back. Coming to you from Jonesboro, Tennessee, the storytelling capital of the world, and broadcasting from WETS 89.5 in Johnson City, Tennessee, it is the Storytown Radio Show. My name is Jules Corriere, and I'll be your host tonight as we navigate through time and geography in this episode all about love and wedding bells and the unexpected experiences some of us have faced leading up to that big day. Now, all of the stories that you'll hear tonight are based on true stories that have been collected throughout the region of the Southern Appalachian Mountains. Now, we go out and we collect these stories, precious as ginseng, up in the mountains, hills, and hollers of East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, and Southwest Virginia. And we put them all together in a script for you, and it's performed by this cast of characters that you're gonna hear tonight. And we're able to do this thanks to some very special groups. Now, we'd like to right now especially thank the Tennessee Arts Commission, the Wild Women of Jonesboro, Main Street Cafe and Catering, and Nancy Hope and Odie Major. And we'd also like to thank Ernest and Nancy Campbell, who decided to honor two of our very special cast members, Calvin and Miriam Robinson, and dedicate this show in their honor tonight. Now, just to say it, we're still presenting this production in a modified format. Now, for those of you who might be new listeners, we have for the past 9 years performed our show before a live audience. Not to say that you're not a live audience, but you're not right here with us in our living room right now with us. Since our world has been changing so much due to the COVID-19 pandemic, we've been putting the production on in some modified waves. If you heard us before, we did it through Skype one time, we did it through the phone lines one time, but today marks the first time that the cast has come together again. Even if we're not in front of you right here tonight, we're at least performing for you live in your own living room, and I hope you're having some nice snacks and cocktails and, you know, soda pop at home enjoying the show. And right now, we are streaming live to you, our very special viewers, our season pass holders. Thank you so much for supporting us through this really strange season. Thanks for sticking with us and hanging in there. And so we all right now just want to say hi. We miss your faces, but we're glad to still bring these important stories to life in this safe way. So where was I before the pandemic disclosure?
Love.
Love, that's right, love. Love stories, love and marriage, wedding stories. And these aren't just the mushy, gushy, gooey stories. One of the first oral histories that I ever collected when I came to Jonesboro was about a wedding, but it was about as far away from romantic as you can even figure. And it is a wedding story of sorts, and Linda Poland is here to tell it to you.
Out in the country, we had two gentlemen by the name of Ben on the Washington County mail route. One lived on the right side of the road, and one lived to the left side of the road. Sometimes they got each other's mail. Not when I was on the job, mind you. But, you know, my day's off. I knew the two Bens, and I knew the handwriting of the people who would write to them. So if they didn't have a last name, or they didn't have an address that was complete, I could always tell them whose mail needed to go to who. Can't do that these days. We get emails because no one writes letters anymore. People used to fall in love through handwritten letters. I have a whole old shoebox full of my grandparents' handwritten notes from the war. Whenever I miss them, I just pull out those letters. And just seeing their handwriting makes me feel like they're with me. But I'm getting off point. As it happens, one Ben was having a courtship with a lady far away from here. They were exchanging letters. This went on for 3 years, all in the mail. And this whole time, they had never seen each other. They were both friends of friends. The mail came one day, the day I took off, And by chance, the fill-in mailman put Ben's mail in the other Ben's mailbox. What happened was the Ben that was courting the lady had mailed enough money for her to catch the train to Jonesboro so the two of them could get married. The letter that was incorrectly mailed was delivered from the lady saying she was thrilled and would be on the next train in the morning and would like for Ben to pick her up. Well, Ben didn't get that letter. Ben did. Other Ben. So the first Ben had no idea that his bride-to-be was on her way. When other Ben got the letter, he thought it sounded pretty good to get married and have a wife, especially since the hard work of the part of courtship had already been done. So other Ben got in his vehicle and picked the lady up at the mail depot. And you know what? They got married. The next morning, Ben, the first Ben, he's hunting for his wife-to-be. And after following the story at the barbershop, the hardware store, and the feed and grain about other Ben's marriage, he got suspicious. So he went to call on Ben and found his wife-to-be, now newlywed, over at other Ben's house. And do you know what she tells him? She says,
"Well, I guess I'll stay over here, Ben. The damage is done, Ben, done."
So let this be a warning to you. Always remember to put the last names on all postal correspondence, along with the proper postage. This has been a public service reminder from the post office.
Thanks, Linda. And believe it or not, that is a true story. At least it started out true. Now we're going up towards the present day for another true story. And if you wonder if this one really is true or not, just know that Nancy Hope Major is telling her own story. I admire her courage to claim it.
The Valentine ads say, "Give her flowers. Give her candy and jewelry, a spa package, and so forth. Good ideas for her, you bet. But I want to do something for him, for my hubby, this Valentine. After asking him for one full hour of lunch and asking him to not say, I must hurry back to the office, I proceeded to make reservations at a nice restaurant. At 1 o'clock, surely the restaurant will not be so crowded, and those that are already there will soon be leaving. There had been an advertisement for a school choral group that would send a quartet to you to sing a couple of songs for a certain dollar amount. The choral group was raising money for a trip. Ah, I like that idea. Money will help them out, and there would be something special for my hubby. I carefully dressed for the lunch date and made sure I arrived before my husband. Oh, I was feeling smug and proud of myself about the surprise that soon would be happening. My sweetie arrived. The hostess was taking us to our table. Oh, so many people knew my husband, which of course caused him to stop and say hello. Oh my, look how full the restaurant is. As we were seated, I made sure I could see the entrance of the restaurant. Then my mind was almost in a panic mode. I did not tell the singing group what I would be wearing or what I look like. And well, after noticing everyone in the restaurant was around our age and taking a deep breath, I realized the singers would be teenagers. After we were well into our meal, I saw the quartet of teenagers come into the restaurant. I excused myself to go to the ladies' room. To the young people, I explained that this was a surprise for my hubby and to watch me when I go sit down at the table with my sweetie. They were to come to our table to sing after I sat down. Oh, a look of surprise was on my husband's face when the singers stopped at our table and started their recorded accompaniment music. Oh, what lovely singing voices they had as they sang, "Let Me Call You Sweetheart." Very good. I had not requested any particular song. I took a hold of my husband's hand as I started the second song. And by now, the whole restaurant was silent and listening and enjoying the entertainment. I thought they had finished singing after they sang the chorus of "You Are My Sunshine." But no, they went on to sing the verse. When they sang, "But when I woke, dear, I was mistaken," the whole restaurant erupted into laughter. Such confusion was on these teenagers' face, obviously. They did not realize what the words were actually saying. Oh, I thanked them and told them their harmony was awesome as I tried not to laugh anymore. My hubby got many teasing calls the next day. However, we did have a romantic Valentine that we laughed about for years.
Nancy Hope, that is wonderful and hilarious. Now, up next, we're going to do a little time traveling again. We are so fortunate that the Heritage Alliance here in Jonesboro is a regular contributor to the show in one of our favorite segments that we like to call Ask the Historian. And we have Ann Jaffellers Mason, director of the Heritage Alliance, here with some historic wedding tales from Jonesboro's archives.
Thanks, Jules. Now, it's not as common anymore, but newspapers used to cover every stage of a relationship, from the first meeting to courting rituals to the proposal, the eventual wedding, and beyond. Here are some relationship highs and lows from the Herald and Tribune.
June 19th, 1873. A certain young gent, while walking with his sweetheart a few days ago, conceived the idea that her bustle needed readjusting. He accordingly applied himself to the work of construction. Stroking it rather violently, he was startled by a sudden noise that resembled an explosion, and there was immediately a very perceptible collapse in its dimensions. Not knowing what would be the final result, or thinking perhaps that the woman herself would vanish into thin air, he made a hasty exit and hasn't been seen in these parts since. Poor innocent young fellow. He is yet to learn that bustles are frequently nothing more than gum sacks inflated with the breath of the fair wearer.
Now, of course, a grand wedding was a major event, and the Herald and Tribune went out of its way to cover such affairs.
March 9th, 1876. All went merry at the wedding bell at 6 3/4 o'clock. The door of the church was thrown open and the invited guests continued pouring in to witness the marriage of our esteemed townsman, Mr. A, to Miss B. Upon entering, we found the hands of tasty ladies had festooned the arch between the lamps, had constructed the beautiful marriage bell, had placed upon the sides of the pulpit elegant wreaths, and in the center, a heart made of ivory and orange blossoms, and had suspended over the pulpit the motto, "May you be happy."
While carried almost into ecstasy by the beautiful surroundings, the march played by Miss X directed our attention to the door, and we watched with admiration as the attendants entered in order. Then the bride and groom marched up the center aisle and took their position under the marriage bell. The sweet-toned music ceased, the ceremony was performed, and the twain became one. The bride wore an elegant white silk with a small lavender stripe and overskirt looped with a silken cord and tassel. Her head was adorned with orange flowers and a beautiful bridal veil. The groom was attired in a conventional suit of black. The lady attendants were dressed in lace, and the gentlemen were tastefully dressed in black. The march was again played, and the two-in-one, followed by the attendants, went to the residence of Mrs. X. and the young ladies and gentlemen thinking seriously of their actions in the past. This is the way I long have sought and mourned because I found it not.
After congratulating the happy couple, we were ushered into the dining room where the tables were groaning with everything nice, wishing, having at all times a tender heart, to alleviate the groanings of anything that cannot make known what it wants. We stored away a goodly amount of dainties. Joy, mirth, happiness, and pleasure resounded through the halls till 12 o'clock when the guests departed with praise upon every lip. Now, we do not know what became of Mr. A and Miss B, but we hope that their marriage was happier than the one that's going to be recounted in this next tale.
April 3rd, 1873. Almost, honey. The course of married life does not always run smoothly. The old folks of a certain family in this town are noted for their snappishness toward each other. On All Fool's Day, the old gentleman said to a friend who had asked about their family affairs that the old lady had come very near calling him honey that morning. The mutual friend, being very glad to hear of such news, asked what she said, and the husband replied, "Why, sir, she said, oh, beeswax, come to breakfast."
Now, this final story is all about love at first sight, 1850 style. Narcissa Chisholm was the daughter of Thomas Chisholm, a leading member of the Cherokee Nation. Her mother, Melinda, was a daughter of William Wharton of Irish descent. Narcissa was born in 1831 near Webster Falls, Indian Territory. After her education, she began to teach music at Miss Sawyer's Female Seminary in Fayetteville, Arkansas in 1850. This story comes from her book, Memoirs of Narcissa Owen, 1831 to 1907.
I filled the teaching position for a year, and then I returned to Fort Smith to be with my sister. I had a schoolmate who belonged to the numerous Smith family. She had been on a visit to Jonesboro, Tennessee, and her father's sister had returned with her to Fort Smith. Somehow, that sister gained an influence over me and induced me to return with her to her home in 1852. Here I was given a position in the Masonic High School, where I taught music until my marriage, October 4th, 1853. I boarded with the daughter of the Honorable John A. Blair, who was a member of Congress at that time, I think. One day while standing on the veranda on the upper floor, I looked out and saw the old-fashioned stagecoach as it came in. This was before the day of railroads. Letitia Simpson, daughter of the proprietor, was with me. My artistic eye took in the figure and the curly hair of a handsome gentleman, my future husband, who came upstairs with his valet and baggage and said, "Tisha, do you see that gentleman? He's my sweetheart." At the dinner table, an old-fashioned long hotel affair, I was at one end next to Mrs. Simpson. Colonel Owen was at the other, next to the gentleman of the house. He was telling a story about the origin of joining right hands in the wedding ceremony. He said, "In ancient times, before the Greek athletes began their contests of skill and strength, they were made to join right hands, and that was the true origin of the custom which had been introduced in the marriage ceremony." That thing amused me, and I laughingly commented on it to Mr. Simpson. I presume Colonel Owen thought I was a fun lover. He asked Mr. Simpson to introduce him to me as we left the dining hall. Of course, of that year, we began our life contest by joining right hands, October 4th, 1853. My younger son, Robert Lathan Owen, was born February 2nd, 1856, and I gave him the Cherokee name Oconostoa, by which he is known among the Cherokee-speaking people. He graduated from Washington and Lee University with Masters of Arts in 1877. He is now U.S. Senator for Oklahoma with his home in Muskogee.
Now, Narcissa and Colonel Owen were married at the Mansion House, which still stands on Main Street, Jonesboro. He was in town as one of the engineers surveying the possible railroad line from Lynchburg to Knoxville. Narcissa was a teacher at the Odd Fellows Female High School. Today, that site is home to the Academy Hill Condominiums. So keep your eyes peeled, because you never know when your next sweetheart might step off the stagecoach or out of a car.
Thanks, Anne. Thanks for that historic look back into the world of weddings past. Now, we're going to go to just over the gap in Asheville, North Carolina, and a story about Bowcatcher Mountain.
Ouch! Careful of that branch. Ouch! And that one! I don't know how you talked me into coming up here.
Shh.
We're halfway up the mountain. The teachers can't hear us.
No, but the bears will.
Bears?
Shh. Come on, we're almost there.
Are you sure they're going to be there?
No, but if we don't take a chance, we'll never know.
Ouch! Why are there so many rocks?
It's a mountain. The whole thing is a rock.
What's that? Stupid branch. I thought it was a snake. I hate nature.
You act like you've never spent time in the outdoors before.
Hey, don't blame me because I come from a civilized home. The whole nature life is for poor people.
Come on. You had to have at least gone outside and chopped wood for the fire.
Oh, no. The handyman did that. Oh, what's this? Oh, I just stepped in a pile of nature. Oh, I got nature all over me.
Well, wipe it off and with a leaf and just come on.
Hey, you can't wipe off nature with nature.
Suit yourself. Come on, it's just a little further.
Are you sure they'll be there? We're going through an awful lot to end up alone.
I'm not sure, but we'll never know if we don't take a chance. Besides, if two girls can climb up this mountain, you can. Would you stop wiping things on your clothes? Hey, over there. I think it's him.
Those trees moved over there. Oh, I think it's a bear.
A bear?
Hey, bud, I got news for you. She's no bear. Wow. And neither is she.
Hi, we didn't know if you would climb up here or not.
We didn't either. I mean, know if you would make it up here. It's a big climb in the dark, especially for girls.
What's that supposed to mean? Girls are just as good as...
No. I mean, because you're wearing a dress, it makes a lot harder. I didn't think a boy would even try to climb up here wearing a dress. Old Fancy Pants over there didn't even want to get his shoes dirty.
Well, I don't blame him. I swallowed a bug.
Wow. Look out there. You can see the whole town. It's like we're on the top of the world.
On top of the world.
So, have you been since the dance?
Good. I'm glad that you got my letter. I'm glad you came up here tonight, like I asked.
It's so pretty up here. Have you been here before?
No way. I mean, I haven't been here before because I never asked anyone to meet me up here before. I've heard some of the guys, and they said it was nice up here and everything, but that's all.
Oh, I didn't ask because of that, but I'm glad to know. Some of the girls told me about this place too, but I've never been up here either. The moon is so close, it's like you could reach out and touch it. If only there were music, we could dance again.
Wait, I thought of that. I mean, I really like dancing with you, and I found this music box, and it reminded me of the dance. I mean, I got it for you, if you like it.
Thank you.
and we'll just let them dance the night away up on Bowcatcher Mountain. Now, we have got another story coming up. As Stephen makes his way up here, I think we've got another love story coming up. Is that right, Stephen?
Well, I kind of didn't listen to everything you said when you were looking for stories about love.
Okay, Stephen. So, what are you saying?
Well, I have a love at first sight story, but it ain't like those other stories that have to do with weddings and whatnot.
Oh, okay. Well, it's got love in it, right?
Well, yeah, but...
Just go ahead and tell the story. We'll figure it out.
She sat so majestic and perfectly on that parking lot. I knew I had to own her. She was a 64 Cadillac limousine and was big, bold, black, and beautiful. Being out of the Navy for only a few months, I thought it'd be nice to own such an unusual vehicle. Immediately, I fell in love with this big, shiny car that was a mile long. It had jump seats opposite the rear seat, a separate air conditioner for the back portion of the car, separate radios and tinted glass that'd roll up and down to separate the driver from the occupants in the back. The car was about 20 feet long, and the back consisted of enough room to host a small party. Automotive lust control of me, and I purchased this excellent show car. Later, I realized that buying this extravagant, attention-getting vehicle proved to be one of the most foolish items I've ever purchased. In 1,000 years, it would never be worth the expense nor the embarrassment that I endured that summer.
Hey, Dave, what in the world are you doing with this hearse?
Well, the morning after I purchased the car, I looked out the window and I realized what a horrible, horrible, horrible mistake I'd made. My love affair with this vehicle was short-lived. I couldn't believe I'd actually traded my sweet little Volkswagen with the roll-back sunroof for this oversized, ugly tank. This car was a bomb. I was embarrassed to drive it. I was so forlorn and miserable. This was the only transportation I had to get to school. The car sucked gas like a newborn calf nursing its mother. I needed a gas station just to keep the fuel needle above empty. I always played the role of a satisfied car owner and lavished great compliments pertaining to the vehicle. My friends loved it, especially when they climbed in the back and I chauffeured them around. They even bought me a black cap so I'd look official. Everyone stared, and though there was someone important in the back, like a politician or a movie star. I had the car for several months, and frankly, tried to sell it the entire time. Most people thought the car was too expensive. Others thought it was outrageous. Finally, through a lot of prayer and salesmanship, I conjured someone into taking over the payments. Alas, I was rid of this monstrous beast. This was my first experience with love at first sight. Presently, when approached with an overwhelming feeling to seize the day, I always give it a night to sleep on it and carpe the next diem if I still feel that love. So far, I haven't made that same mistake again.
My mama loved to sing. She was singing when she met my dad. He was a coal miner and there had been a cave-in. He was badly hurt and had to stay in the hospital for about 3 months. My mother worked there and she sang through the hallways as she did her rounds. My father fell in love with her voice first, even though he couldn't see who was singing because of his bandages. Then later, when the bandages were removed, he fell in love with the rest of her. He was released from the hospital and went to stay with his uncle over in Elizabethton. Now, he had to get a new job because he wasn't going to be a miner anymore, so he learned how to be a barber. After a little while, my mother had decided she wanted a haircut. She wanted to have it bobbed, but no beauty parlors would do that back then. It would be a scandal in the 20s to bob a woman's hair, at least around here. So she decided to go to a barber and have it done, and to go to the next town where no one would know her. Wouldn't you know, she walked into his barber shop. She sort of hummed a little while she waited her turn, and he thought it sounded familiar. When she sat down in his chair, she began to sing a little tune, and he realized it was her. And right then he cut her ear. But he quickly put some powder on it to stop the bleeding. He asked her if she recognized him because he remembered her and her voice. She did remember him. Then he asked if he could court her. Well, they were married in a very short time, and she sang to him the rest of their days.
My grandfather, my grandmother, that is, was with Blue Ridge Pottery. I have so many of the things she made, a barn full. They sat out in the weather for years and years, but it was our everyday wear. People think it's special now, but I always thought it was special. I like finding her signature on the things she made. She was what you would call a spinster.
Excuse me? I prefer to think myself as a bachelorette.
She even became somewhat of a mail order bride.
Scandalous! I was nothing of the kind. I was introduced in a letter from my brother to a man from Kingsport that he met at a logging camp in Oregon. They were the only two fellas there from East Tennessee. They found each other among the hundreds of men by hearing the common call of the East Tennessean.
Hey, how's your ma and them?
What's that?
I said, how's your ma and them?
Hey, are you from East Tennessee?
Yeah.
Hey, me too. How's your ma and them?
He's pretty good. My sister's caring for him. How's your ma and them?
The two became friends immediately. Uncle John found out that his new friend Harry, an older fella, had never been married. He also let his friend know that his sister Cora had never been married.
Is that so? Bless her heart. Is it because she had a face like yours?
Very funny. No, she actually had a young man from town propose to her a long time ago, but she turned him down. She's the youngest of all a sibling, so she took on the responsibility for caring after Daddy and Mama. They've been kind of sickly for a lot of years, and they never got worse with Cora looking after them, but they never got better, neither. She never really had a chance to live a life of her own.
She sounds like a good girl. Well, I guess the two of us are a couple of blank pages where romance is concerned.
I could give you her address if you want to write her a letter.
My grandmother Cora received a letter from my grandfather Harry. She was really moved by his letter, and she sent him a Bible through the mail. There was also a letter from her in the Bible.
He would only know if I had wrote him back, if he opened up the Bible and read it to find my letter. I knew he was a good man. When the next letter I got back from him answered some of my questions from my letter I had placed in Ephesians. Yes, he read my letter in the Bible I sent him. So we continued our correspondence for some time.
My grandfather decided that he'd had enough of Oregon, and he made his long trip home. He was 60. My grandmother was in her 40s.
I was just turned 40.
And my grandfather, Harry, proposed.
This, a blank page?
Yes, I thought, Cora, you and I might fill the rest of our pages together.
She said yes, and they married. She had my dad when she was
still young enough to have children. And we continued our family legacy, filling our pages of history into this century.
My mom and dad met a long time ago in 1929. They courted by horseback. Dad would court my mom on the bridge on the Hartmantown Road up above Granddaddy, who was Benjamin Henry Barr. She was a Barr, Margaret Barr. Mother was walking down the road carrying a bedpan. She was returning it to Mrs. Shipley. They had borrowed it because one of her relatives had been sick and Mother was returning it. Daddy came through on a horse. That's how they met. He continued to meet her out on the road. They married November the 29th, 1929. But there's more to the story. Daddy sent my mother a letter and asked her to meet him by the road and to be ready for a surprise. I still have this letter. He said, "Be ready for a surprise." When she got there, he proposed and said that he had already had a preacher up the road a little ways. Thought they'd get married on the side of the road because that's how they had started. Well, they married beside the road because the preacher had met them up there. But when she wasn't home later that night, her brother went out after her, but he couldn't find them. And they were already married by the time he did find them. So our mom and dad had had a very romantic courtship and marriage. Mom and dad had a good marriage. They had 7 children, 2 boys and 5 girls, and they were married for 45 years.
I'm a Scot. That's who I was originally born as. You might have heard of Scott Strawberries. That's my family. I'm a Cantrell now. Have been for the longest part of my life, which is over 8 decades now. My daddy was in World War I in 1918. He was a good builder. He built barracks in England during the Great War. Daddy saved his money overseas in service. He didn't have anyone or anything to spend it on. When he came out, he went to work for Hunter Allen in Elizabethton Building. Hunter Allen built some of those ice houses in Irwin. Housing was needed after the war and businesses were growing in the 20s. Then Daddy went in the 1920s and set steel in Kingsport for those buildings over there. Set beams, set steel. It was a new way of building. That's what they did with the Empire State Building, you know. Kingsport didn't build anything that grand, but they did put up some big structure then, and my daddy set them all. He was working on a building at the college in 1922, building a little cafeteria for the school. He was on the roof, and he saw her. I mean, he said, it was instant. He looked down from above at her and knew she was the one, even before he met her or knew her name. He asked around and found out who she was. I'd like to think that she looked up at him that same day that he looked down and saw her and that they locked eyes. That would be a good story, but it's not what happened. He saw her, then sought her out and began courting her. That's what they did back then. They'd go courting. He'd call on her and they'd go for a stroll or maybe a church picnic. They'd sit on a porch swing and read from a book or talk. They discovered that they were such a good match for each other and they would have a lot to talk about with each other through the years. And they did. They were married from 1922 until 1981. 59 years, a lifetime of love.
Some people say that you don't have a choice about how you can live your one life, but I know otherwise. We got a choice about how we can live and about how we can die. I watched my grandparents make those choices. They had an old-fashioned love you could only hear about in stories. Grandpa was older than Grandma, and they were married to each other almost their whole lives. Grandma cared for Grandpa through 3 strokes and 2 heart attacks and 1 fear, living in a world without him. Then she was struck with cancer. She stayed home more and more from work, but she didn't want to tell him why. Grandfather kept asking, "Why isn't she going to work?" My mother finally told him. He immediately got sick. Grandma willed herself. She said, "The one thing I am not going to do is I'm not going to die before he does. I won't leave him alone in the world." She died 1 month, 1 day, 1 hour after him. Even though they vowed, "Till death do us part," not even death could part them. That was the kind of love they had. And on the night she died, the moon was bright, not quite full, but shining. And above the mountains, flying, almost dancing in the light, were two birds, the lovebirds, reunited.
Love, marriage. I love those stories. People coming together, love at first sight. We'd like to thank everybody who shared their stories with us for tonight's show, because these do come from real people, real stories, our stories from this part of the country. Thank you tonight for joining us so much. And we'd also like to thank a few other people for tonight's show: the Tennessee Arts Commission, the Wild Women of Jonesboro, Main Street Cafe and Catering, Nancy Hope and Odie Major. And again, it's an honor of our two lovebirds over there, Calvin and Miriam Robinson. Be sure now to tune in the last Wednesday of each month to listen to our broadcast on WETS 89.5 FM at 8 p.m. And if you haven't heard yet, we have a new podcast, the Storytown Podcast, and that we drop new episodes every 2 weeks. And you can find us as Storytown, all one word, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or if you want to find us online, we're at storytown.simplecast.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, hang in there. We'll see you again in person as soon as we can. For now, stay healthy and keep telling your stories. Good night.